man is basically a social animal. The real world is such so that he cannot fulfill this nature of love relationships between the people that he needs to have love him and he needs to love. The world is imperfect. Everybody basically is selfish and is sinful. And therefore, the person in this world cannot find really the extent of love that he needs. This makes him realize his dependence on God. And he does this through his imagination. He sees the kinds of love relationships around him and magnifies this and says, that's what God must be like. And I think God is something like that, that this is done purposely. Now, what about, you know, I'm sort of throwing things out at random here because I didn't bother to organize them in the notes. But I'm trying to build up, I suppose, a mosaic that McLuhan does to make a total picture. What does this mean about the nature of man and his needs in any given situation? If we see someone, and there's one point that I sort of skipped around at that I want to hit sort of hard right now. The AMA came out in the late 1950s, and if I were pressed to it, I could find the issue because I've read it in my, you know, partly to work my lectures up for class and course on personality development. And in the AMA article, this was said, that 75% approximately of all the people who come to a medical doctor for help would benefit just as greatly or benefit more from the relationship. See, they said these are psychosomatic illnesses. I'm stating it not as well as the AMA did. But that what they really get help from out of coming to see a doctor is the psychological relationship or a placebo or something that does not have any pharmacological properties to aid them in their biological distress. See, in other words, what this statement was saying is that 75% of the people that come to a medical doctor for help really should go to a psychologist, or they'd put it, a psychiatrist, not a psychologist. But they say that the help that's being given here is really of the kind that provides love and support for the constant stresses that are impinging on the body, you see. That 75% of all man's ills are psychosomatic, of his biological ills. You know, the people that come to a doctor for help really would be helped just as much by a psychologist. Now, some of these people, let's take a case of ulcers, which a lot of people who have ulcers still argue about this, but other people, most commonly now, it is accepted that ulcers are caused by a psychological stress which makes the stomach secrete acid constantly, hydrochloric acid, and which eventually makes the stomach wear away its lining of mucus and eat itself up. Is that sort of the way it would be stated? Ulcers?
That ulcers are, I don't know that I can accept the psychosomatic explanation for it totally.
Well, let me tell you the psychosomatic explanation, and then maybe you and I'll have an argument when I get done. That ulcers can be cured in either of two ways, and I know of people that say this from their personal experience, that this has happened. That ulcers either may be cured through surgery and the proper diet and the proper kind of medicinal, you see, physical kind of, either surgical or what kind of procedure would you call it when you somehow operate on the body in ways other than psychologically. You see, that's what you're doing. You control the diet, you control you maybe stop, you surgically, you know, repair the stomach and you make it strong again, and you control the diet, and you do this in ways other than psychologically, and this helps the person, and his ulcers then are better. But another way of helping the same kind of situation is to prescribe a great deal of relief from psychical frustration so that a person no longer experiences enough stress in order to keep him pouring these acid secretions into his stomach, that his stomach sort of quiets down and settles into the routine of other people that don't have ulcers, because the theory is that not only adrenaline but acid secretions are making this person have ulcers. This is pretty much the psychological belief, and ulcers are considered in most cases by psychologists to be a psychosomatic disorder that can be cured in either of two ways, either through the use of surgery or medicines or diet, or else without doing any of these, or maybe in combination, but the main cause of this being a psychological stress. This is really the definition of a psychosomatic disease. If there's a psychological stress really responsible for this chemical or other kind of reaction in the body that weakens a person and makes them have an illness. Now,
You know, that saying that, that it can be cured psychologically, you know, doesn't imply that it's caused psychologically. That's a logical fallacy.
That's what I'm saying is that is my belief, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not theoretical. In fact, it denies relation. It's a relation of principle to subaltern.
Sure, I know this. But the same thing, look, we can talk about somebody like, you know, like Hume then, and say, you know, that there is absolutely no way we can ever talk about cause and effect. The only way any human being ever says this is a cause of that is that he demonstrates in his life, if you do this, then that follows.
No, I was just mentioning that yeah. The word cause in the way that
right.
It
well,
be clear that it's not
well,
that clear that it's a cause because you can cure it that way.
Well, see, what I'm saying is though, that in my mind, this is a very good indication, just as like when we say, we flick a light switch and the light turns on, and we say, well, the cause of the light going on is that we flick the light switch. Then we get a little bit more sophisticated and we say, well, it isn't that you flick the light switch, it's that you started electrons, you know, going along this wire. And then you say, well, the cause of the light going on is the electrons, because this is what happens. And then you know, we might be more sophisticated and find out we can do it in a different way, and we'll say, well, that wasn't the real cause. But anything at all in this whole world that we say this is the cause of that, we can't prove it. We can only demonstrate if you do this, then that follows. The only knowledge we have of causes. And what I am saying, I'll put myself out on a real limb this way and say this, that it is my belief that at least, well, let me say this, and it's even, I was going to say 75% and go along kind of with the AMA, but let me say 100%. That 100% of the people who are experiencing a stress that affects their body and makes them sick, that part of the nature of this stress is not just the bacteria and the kinds of things that the doctors will chemically try to get out of there or to cure, you know, whatever it might be. That this stress is really here for almost everybody, and for everybody. That some people, when they work in a tuberculosis asylum or something, and maybe I shouldn't talk about tuberculosis because I guess there's still some doubt really about whether this is a contagious disease, though most people say that it is. But let's take a very contagious disease like, what's a real contagious disease offhand? Any of them?
Flu.
Flu, okay, take the flu. Some people can work in a hospital where flu germs are rampant and never have had a flu shot, but somehow don't get the flu. And other people succumb to the flu. I think it's quite well established that in this room there are many kinds of germs that if our resistance were very low, we'd allow these germs to grow in our body and we'd become sick. But most of us have resistance high enough that we don't develop these colds or sore throats or flu or whatever the germs are. It is my belief that love, you know, and I'm not talking here in the nature really that, you know, one of the gifts of the Holy Spirit, if you really have love, is that you have a healing power. I don't take it really quite exactly this way, but very similar to it. That a person experiencing love, defined as I define it, you are so good that I am attracted to you and want to be with you, that love will help ease any stress. And I've told sometimes before about things that even are absurd to talk about in this way. Like the stress of intense physical pain from a gunshot wound. And I know I've heard of stories like this that are supposed to be true, where a person in Vietnam, let's say, gets a leg shot off or a very severe wound, and he really does not feel that wound and doesn't develop many of the complications that might set in, because psychologically he's saying, what a relief, I'm going home to the people that love me. That he doesn't really feel the intense pain that in a different situation he'd feel. Sure, he feels it, but not in the same way. That this is true of every illness. I've noticed when our little kids are sick, they get sicker if we leave them. If when they're sick, we leave them with a babysitter or we go out of the house for some reason, somehow they get sicker. And when we stay with them by their bedside, it helps them get well somehow. I can't demonstrate the reason why exactly, except through my theoretical framework, which, you know, I know is a very weak one yet at this point, really not well worked out, not documented. But I'm telling you my personal belief. I'm stepping out on a limb this way and saying what I firmly believe is that love helps ease all stress. That a person who has this somatic conviction of deep love, whether it's the love of God or the love of husband or the love of wife or the love of friend, that if this person experiences this love relationship, their physical stress even is alleviated. Now let me tell you some experiences I've seen and that are unexplainable without this kind of a theoretical framework, I think, or otherwise a theological one. The cases that have been rather well documented are what we call faith cures, for instance, both at Lourdes, France, and even Oral Roberts. The one especially that that well, very, very excellent records have been kept at Lourdes, and Roman Catholic commissions and medical doctors and lots of people have really investigated and shown that many, many very, very unexplainable events have happened here. That people who have diseases that right now medically we cannot find a cure for have been cured at Lourdes. This grotto filled with wheelchairs and crutches and more all over the place. Give testimony to the fact that some people have been cured in a way that doctors find hard-pressed to explain right now. I think what's happened in these cures, if they're really investigated, is that the person experiences a very definite kind of a love relationship that affects the chemistry of their body. We know the chemistry of the body is affected by these kind of relationships, that a relationship of fear puts up an entirely different kind of blood chemistry into a person than a relationship of love, and that somehow there's something going on. See, this is where we may get into a debate. That love does have an effect of strengthening a person's resistance from even these physical things, and if a person does become sick, a love relationship can help the body be strengthened in its overcoming of various illnesses. In fact, I think probably every illness. I am not saying that there is no chemical effect of disease. I think absolutely every disease does have a chemical or some kind of an outside cause. Definitely. And that every disease known, if we only could but chemically alter that, you see, we could cure a person this way. I'm not by any means advocating that people don't go to doctors or that surgery isn't good or anything like that. What I'm saying is that, say, a bacteria starts growing in the body, one way to cure them is to kill a bacteria by an outside agent. Another way is to kill a bacteria by somehow allowing this person's internal resistance to eat up this matter that's invaded his body. That it can be done either from the outside or from the inside. And sometimes, in fact, almost 100% of the time, it works much, much better if we attack it from the outside first, but also give this supportive relationship. It is also my belief, and this is why I'm glad you're here to see if you'll go along with this, that many people who are treated medically, chemically, in order to interfere with these matters that have invaded their bodies, do not recover when they should recover. And that in these cases, what really is at work here is that a person's, sometimes I've heard it called will to live, but that if a person doesn't have this will to live, that he will die regardless what we do medically when he gets one of these diseases, that somehow his body doesn't rally to aid the outside medication or whatnot. And that the reason it doesn't rally is that he's sort of given up, it isn't a good enough place, that in some ways it's a way of suicide, that, well, I've got this disease now and I'll just let it kill me, there isn't enough really to keep me going. And that, I've thrown out a lot of things here, and I could throw out lots more, but I think I have a feeling that what I've mostly done is made everybody here disagree with me in one way or another for various reasons. And what I'd like to do is give you a chance to say what it is you object to, and then see if there isn't something that I can say that shows that we're not maybe really far apart, or otherwise I can give evidence at least to support my point of view. Yeah, go ahead.
Don't you think when God created man, that he created him, he knew what he was doing? This is no accident that we are created this way.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So that in psychology, you are searching for the answer,
mm-hmm.
for the cause and the results.
Mm-hmm.
And possible cures.
Mm-hmm.
So you aren't trying in any way to dispute the creation of
that. By no means, no. What I really am saying is that God created man in a certain way, but the only way that man really is able to get in touch with God is not through the use of reason. I think these people that look for God, for instance, and say we can reason it out whether there is or not. Even St. Thomas Aquinas, you see, who gave these seven proofs for the existence of God, he says, rational animal that we are, we can figure out the nature of God and what he's like, at least that there is one. I think it's doomed to failure, and I think it's been shown that it's doomed to failure, that it is not the use of our reason that puts us in touch with God, that we can't do it through the use of reason.
Well, does sin enter into this?
Yes. Let me just define what I mean by sin. I say that every man has this goal in life, which is to be united with God. This is what real love is. It's man's attraction for the ultimate good. See, God is ultimate good, and our attraction for God is a kind of a goal that's in our life that we have nothing to do with but must fulfill in order to be really, truly human. Sin is anything that we do or don't do that somehow puts a barrier between us and God, either that turns us away from God or doesn't help us get closer. So sin is anything really that turns us towards ourselves instead of towards this relationship of attraction towards good.
Well,
whether it's good in other people or good in God. So the truly loving person finds his way towards God a lot faster than the person who doesn't love. That if we look inward, we won't find it, but if we're attracted to the good, we'll find it.
Yeah, but you have to have a norm for sin. I think not.
In a sense, yes. But see, this is really where the word sin came from. The old Hebrews had this great big bullseye, and they did archery practice. And if you missed the center of the bullseye, that was one word. But as you shot, and you missed your aim so completely that you missed the whole target, that word was the word we translate as sin. That you completely miss your aim, that's sin. That doesn't mean that you have to do something in order to sin. It means that man's nature is basically sinful just because he isn't always he isn't always being completely attracted to God. Sometimes he's attracted to himself instead, or to something that leads him away from God.
Yeah, but God created man perfectly.
Well, this is another story. I think yes. I think God created, I spent an hour on this one other day here, and I'll do it again in the near future, I suppose, just to quote, because there's so many new people. That psychologically, I think this is, let me just tell you what the reason is or how it's explained, and then we'll go into this in much more detail later, only if you want to. That man is conceived, that when he's conceived, he is perfect. And then he's truly, he's really man when, from the time he's conceived until the time he's born. But at the moment of man's birth, he is no longer perfect. He is in what theologians call a state of original sin. He is very self-centered at his birth. Until he's born, he's not. He's in the image and likeness of God, and he is good, very good. But the birth process, by the nature of the birth process being so frustrating for the infant, it turns him away from all this love and separates him from the love of mother and also from the love of God in a very real way. And it's so frustrating, it turns him towards himself instead of towards God, and he is sinful then at birth. And I could go through this in much more detail and more later.
Is the child supposedly affected by his environment even before birth?
Oh, sure. No question at all about that.
Are there secretions within the mother?
Sure. This has been very definitely proved. That he's affected if the mother smokes cigarettes, he's affected by the nicotine. If she's given certain kind of drugs before birth, the child is born, in a state of lethargy, say, if the mother's given certain kind of anesthesia during the birth process, that if the mother receives x-rays, the kid is likely to be affected in various ways, that there are many things that affect him. There's even a theory that much of a child's really, even intelligence, is affected through the environment of the womb rather than just genetically.
But isn't it true that the emotional stability of a family during pregnancy is very important?
There have been studies that have indicated this may be so. That a mother who rejects her child before he's born will be born with a child, much more frequently with a child that some people have said is colicky, that somehow the mother's rejection of the baby affects her secretion of adrenaline. You see, she's under more stress while carrying the baby. And this is one of the substances that can affect the baby also, and that he'll have this higher degree of activity. He'll be less able to digest his food because his stomach secretions are also affected. That he'll be born really in a much different state than if the mother hadn't had this kind of stress while carrying him. There's a research done by Sontag and I forget the name of the other person who sort of showed this fairly clearly. Now, there are other studies too. This is the one that just comes to mind now.
Well, do you think there's an essential difference in the infant and the fetus now before birth and then after it's born?
Psychologically, yes.
Psychologically?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel this way. I'm not going...
Severed from its mother? Is that true?
Yes. What I'll do some day coming, and it takes quite a while to do, is explain this even, how this is a possible interpretation psychologically of the Adam and Eve story. Being driven from the Garden of Eden, being very much the same. In fact, being exactly what is meant, what happens in human beings when they're separated from, driven out of the womb, expelled from the womb. And there's a real good case to be made for this. Excellent case, I think. When we take all the symbolism here, that every story in the Bible, as well as many other stories, have many degrees of truth. But this is one degree of truth in the Adam and Eve story, I think.
I read in quite a while ago, a Force magazine, where they were doing some experimenting with fetus and birth, etc., where they were taking in, I don't know, lots of theories on this. And they think, I think, that someday that they can make a artificial womb, maybe.
Oh, yeah, they've done this already for the first, what, 18 days? Is that right? Yeah, in Italy.
Well, what if they can take it from conception and raise this child up so he doesn't really have to be born? Is this child going to be born without original sin?
Well, I have a feeling that there'll be a lot of things that'll be the matter that he'll suffer from the nature of the womb. And this might possibly be one difference. Let me just quickly, say one thing that I think follows most clearly from what I said about what I did. Maybe next time I'll answer a lot more questions that I'm sure you'll raise. And this is really sticking myself out on a limb, but I really believe it, that I've noticed in the cases of at least of the people that I've worked with at St. Olaf, that regardless what it is that is the matter with them, whether one of their primary complaints is of a physical or a psychological nature. If it's physical, always this is done in connection with a medical doctor or physician. But whatever their stress is, it can be very definitely alleviated by a liberal administration of love. Love being a recognition of good in them and an attraction to them because of this good. That regardless what the stress, whether it's of a physical or of a psychological nature, and I know if it's a psychological nature, I know it works. Because I have seen it work, and I've even worked it, many times. And I believe this holds true of most physical ills, too. That the body's resistance to whatever it is that's making him sick can be much stronger if that person is given emotional support, the emotional support of love. Without this emotional support of love, the body is weakened, and the person sort of allows himself to die or get sick because the world just isn't a good place to be healthy and alive in without this love. And that sometimes this is an experience that is even more true of those people who have once experienced a really strong love relationship, and now the person they love is either dead or gone. Maybe his business makes him travel for a year at a time or so, and the wife stays without the husband or something. That the administration of a liberal dose of love is something that will help aid the physical process of recovery. Right. See, that's where I'm going back to what I started out with. Well, why should I give you love? Well, it keeps me warm. In other words, it affects my body in a way. If I'm cold, it has this kind of a nature. Before I answer any questions, let's say this, that there's coffee now, and anybody who wants to leave, leave, and I'll leave myself in just a few minutes. But if you have a real pressing question, I'll stay, and everybody else can leave that wants to.
What about communal living?
Making me scared, right?
No. I was just going to say, that's one thing you've never been.
If this is just for one day,
to my knowledge,
if I have to be under a tape, boy.
You don't have to worry. You're just completely free. And really, the village itself is in the tradition that Dr. Christensen represents in the church. I remember a talk of his once when I was young on the Christian and truth. And it was just simply the fact that if you've got to run away from truth, you're running away from Christ too. The two will meet. You don't have to be that worried about it. But if you're sort of defending a line or a tradition as truth, well, then of course you've got a right to run scared, because very likely it will be overwhelmed by Christ with the truth. So you'll be left without any place to stand on if that's what you've got. And he's represented the spirit in our church in a magnificent way. As I said, introducing him before some of you may have come, that Dr. Jaroslav Pelikan, who is one of our outstanding intellectuals in this day, unquestionably, not just Lutheran, but intellectuals as such. I mean